So let's give a warm welcome to Secretary of Agriculture Mike Johanns.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here. Getting my eyes adjusted to see if there's any friends from Nebraska here. Yeah, there we go. I was out here a couple years ago when I first took this job, and I had a chance to visit with folks from Nebraska, and I came out and I said, I feel homesick. And even now I feel homesick. It is good to be here, though, to offer a few thoughts. I always like to start with a story, as you know, and this story is actually borrowed from a good friend of mine, a guy by the name of Bill Barrett. Many of you knew Bill. Bill served in the United States Congress, and he represented a place in Nebraska called the 3rd Congressional District. Now, if you're familiar with the state, that's a huge area. In fact, the 3rd Congressional District is bigger than a number of states in the United States. Well, Bill had just been elected, and it was one of his first re-election efforts. And so he probably wasn't completely known, even out in the 3rd District. So he's out campaigning one day, and there's a group of guys sitting in a row just like this. And so he's shaking hands down the row, and he comes up to this one fella, and he says to this guy, he says, I'm Bill Barrett. I'm running for Congress. I'd sure appreciate your support. And this fellow said, and you have it. And Bill said, wow, that was pretty easy. And he continues to make his way down the row. Well, here's this conversation behind him. The fellow sitting next to this guy who had offered his support said, why are you supporting that guy? And the fellow who had offered his support said, well, anybody would be better than the damn fool we have now. I have to tell you, there are some days in my job I feel that way. Anybody would be better than the damn fool we have now. So, well, it is great to be here. I understand that I am the opening act this morning for the Elvis tribute tonight, so I'll try to live up to that. I am glad to be here. I look forward to a few minutes to talk about some very exciting developments that are taking shape, and I want you to know I believe that we are really on the edge of real change in agriculture. You're seeing it. You've been affected by some of it. And I want to visit with you about that. Well, let me, if I might, start out and tell you how much I appreciate the great leadership that you have in Cattlemen. I work with these folks on a regular basis because we have so many issues that involve your industry. And they just do a great job. Your staff in Washington, your officers, just really, really fine people. We also appreciate the good work that's being done in the checkoff. Certainly understand that at times there's debate about that, but I've seen so many good things come out of the checkoff effort, and I just want to tell you that I think that's important, and I think it really puts you on the cutting edge, if you will, for your industry across the world. I will also say that now after 2 years as a cabinet member, I say this with great certainty, we're very fortunate to have a leader like George W. Bush. He set a strong course for ag policy, and he's allowing us to do that now as we have made, I believe, some really exciting proposals for the next farm bill. He's committed to an approach that advances policies that will set the stage for continued growth and prosperity for American farmers and ranchers, not only while we are there in Washington, but for years ahead after we have left. I believe that the Farm Bill proposals that we announced this week will also do just that. Let me, if I might, talk to you a little bit about that. We've applied in these proposals the collective common sense of farmers and ranchers from across this great nation. We conducted 52 Farm Bill forums across this country, and they all had the same format. We put a microphone out there, and we said to people, come on up and tell us what's on your mind. No prearranged testimony. No calling the president of this organization or that organization and saying, could you talk about this subject? They were welcome, but they were as welcome as any other farmer who showed up and had something that they wanted to tell us. And speak to us they did, and it took us in some new directions. We drew on those comments to combine the best features of our farm policy of the last few years, including, I might add, a very strong safety net for producers, with a more market-oriented approach to meeting the challenges and seizing upon the opportunities that we see out there in the years ahead. Now, your industry has been affected by the ethanol phenomena that has occurred. Now, ethanol has been around a long time in this nation, but in the last couple of years, we have really seen it taken off. You heard the president's speech at the State of the Union. He is setting bold goals, and that's going to mean big changes. In his State of the Union address, he raised the bar by committing the nation to cutting its total gasoline usage by 20% over the next 10 years. I doubt that we would get much debate, even in this room, that we have to somehow figure out the right approach and the right policy to truly lessen our dependence on foreign oil, oil that oftentimes comes from parts of the world where, to be very candid with you, they're not our friends. To get us there, he proposed another step, boosting our mandatory production of renewable and alternative fuels to 35 billion gallons a year over the next decade, the next 10 years. Now, let me, if I might, share some statistics with you. 6 years ago, just 6 years ago, there were 54 ethanol plants in operation. If they were all running at maximum capacity, they would have produced less than 2 billion gallons per year. Certainly it was there, but not in the level that we're seeing today. Fast forward to today, 110 ethanol plants produce a combined total of 5 billion gallons per year. And more than 70 additional plants are under construction. Probably plants under construction or under expansion in your neighborhood. Taken together, these new plants will increase our production capacity by about 6 billion gallons a year. I want you to know that I haven't, for a minute, lost sight of the fact that the growing demand for corn has had a very direct impact on you, on the price that you pay for feed that is absolutely vital to your business, part of your input cost. And I also want you to know, ladies and gentlemen, that neither has the President of the United States. Now, over the past few months, I've been with the President on a number of occasions. In fact, on five separate occasions just recently, we've talked in depth about this issue, and the impact that it has on you is very much on his mind. That is why the Farm Bill we are proposing includes a very strong federal commitment to accelerating our research with cost-effective ways of producing cellulosic ethanol from biomass. You see, we believe that by making good use of our abundant supplies of agricultural and wood waste, and by harvesting grasses and woody plants for their cellulosic content, we can vastly expand the supply of raw material for ethanol and therefore ease the pressure on the corn crop. Our Farm Bill proposal calls for USDA to spend $1.6 billion over the next 10 years to speed the development and the production of renewable fuels. I can tell you that the bulk of that money is directed at research on better and more efficient ways to make cellulosic ethanol. We are going to continue our efforts to improve the quality and the digestibility of the animal feeds that come from corn ethanol, like distiller grains. And on top of that, the proposal calls for an additional $2.1 billion loan program to support cellulosic ethanol projects, to support their construction in rural areas. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I think you'll agree that this constitutes a strong commitment to nailing down the knowledge and building the infrastructure we must have to meet a much larger share of our energy needs, you know, not on the plains of the Middle East, but on the plains of America. And livestock producers can contribute in very important ways. Part of the $1.6 billion for energy includes $500 million for grants to farmers and ranchers to produce energy. Turning methane from livestock waste, for example, into electricity, or maybe it's renewable natural gas, all of that could be a part of this initiative. You have also, and I want you to know how much we appreciate this, you have also been very committed stewards of the land and active participants in the conservation programs designed to preserve our land resources or restore them where that is necessary. So in putting the Farm Bill together, we took a hard look at the way we could run these programs and the way we had run them in the past. And I have to tell you, when we looked to the past, we found plenty of room for improvement. We did hear at the Farm Bill forums your comments and your complaints about overlap, complexity, and inefficiency. And you know what? The more we looked at what we were doing, you were right. In the conservation title of the Farm Bill, the administration proposes that we address those basic concerns by consolidating and simplifying and streamlining our existing programs. We will remove obstacles to sharing new techniques and technologies. We will unravel these complicated programs that have confused you, and quite honestly, at times have confused us. And we propose a number of steps as well. We will make it easier for beginning farmers and ranchers, as well as socially disadvantaged producers, to access our conservation programs. If you are a beginning farmer or rancher, or if you have a son or daughter who is interested in staying on the ranch or on the farm, we now have programs that are specifically targeted to assist them. We will make the merit of individual projects, rather than regional funding formulas, the key criteria in allocating resources for these programs. And we will set new rules and standards to make markets for valuing and trading environmental credits more viable. Now, what do I mean by that? I could give a whole speech on that topic and did recently, as a matter of fact. But what we're talking about, we're talking about credits for reducing greenhouse gases or improving water quality. These might be traded, literally traded, in years to come. And, in fact, some of that is being done now. You see, our aim is to see the best stewards of the land rewarded, and the power of market forces harnessed to improve the overall quality of our environment. At the same time, we want to address the market distortion in prices for farmland that has been caused by owners seeking to do 1031 exchanges. Boy, was this a topic that got a lot of debate as we went out in the country. We heard repeatedly in our Farm Bill forums that these tax-driven transactions have been pushing land prices and cash rents up for everyone in rural areas and making it very difficult to compete, especially for young people. So as a part of the proposal, we will bar land that is bought in a 1031 exchange from being eligible from commodity programs. You can still do the exchange, shelter that income. It's just that commodity payments won't be available on that land. This will let market drive land purchases in prices instead of the tax code. Finally, we are backing all of this up with a very strong financial commitment to conservation in the Farm Bill. In the Farm Bill proposals that I made just a couple of days ago, we are proposing to spend an additional $7.8 billion
on new conservation projects. Now listen to this. Here's a program that many of you have utilized very effectively, EQIP, Environmental Quality Incentives Program. An additional $4.2 billion for a revised EQIP program will be set aside, and as you know, this has been so important to livestock producers. It will be a better program and better funded. An additional $2.1 billion more for the Wetlands Reserve Program, which again, I'm pretty confident in saying there are people in this room that have participated in this program. An additional $900 million for a new private lands protection program, which incidentally would include the Grassland Reserve Program, and $500 million more to improve and expand the Conservation Security Program nationwide. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I've said this, and many in Washington disagree with me, but I believe in it. I'm a firm believer in federal support for agriculture. You see, I believe it's a wise investment. I believe it's sound policy. But the real issue is, how do we provide that support? I think now we are faced with a choice, maybe more than ever, in the development of farm policy. We can allow the future to be driven by international challenges that threaten to dismantle our programs piece by piece. We have a case against our cotton program pending. We have a case against our corn program that's just been started. Or in the alternative, we can grab a hold of these issues and craft our farm policy in a way that leads us to the future with vision and with foresight. You see, in these farm bill proposals, we have chosen the path of leadership, and we present reform-minded approaches to the future of agriculture. So in putting our proposals together, we have aimed to make farm policy more equitable, more predictable, and more secure from challenge. Now, I know that in recent weeks, many of you have much more to contend with than wondering about this proposal or other federal policy decisions made in Washington or how they might even affect you. You've been trying to bounce back from some very hard knocks from Mother Nature. In a tough business, and in this case, Mother Nature has not always been kind. I want you to know that we've been doing everything we can to make sure that we are working through the damage assessments at the department and then issuing the county-by-county disaster designations where losses allow us to do that. And we do stand ready to provide the emergency loans to producers who would qualify for that. Now, there's another subject that it seems to me can be just as frustrating as the weather. I will tell you, in my life these days, it's probably more frustrating than the weather, and that's the state of export markets for beef. Completing our recovery from the BSE issues of December 03, we've been working to restore broad access to export markets for our beef. And as I said during my confirmation hearing, now almost 2 years ago to this day, this was going to be my highest priority while in the Secretary's chair. I will tell you that we have made some good progress in parts of the world. We certainly have beef going back into Japan, and the gratifying thing by that, it's been well accepted by the consumer. You know, they cited all these statistics about what the consumer might do with our beef. You know what they did? They stood in line to get it. The time has come, though, whether it's Japan or another trading partner, to base decisions upon science. We have said all along that we believe in the golden rule for trade, and that is we will do what we expect others to do. And what we expect others to do is live by international standards. If this were a football game, I'd say that we've run the ball down the field pretty effectively. But I would also say that just about when we're ready to go over the line there and score the touchdown, somebody runs in, moves the goalpost. Well, I can assure you that it's not a game that we are in, and I intend to do everything I can to make sure that people understand that this is a top priority not only for me, but in this administration. Let me tell you what we have in mind. Thank you. Thank you. Well, let me tell you what we have in mind. We pulled together data on all the testing we've done over the past few years. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience as we worked our way through that. But now I can tell you, into this, by about 3 years or thereabouts, we have over 800,000 tests in all, 10 times the number that was required. All those tests designed to test the health of our cattle herd. And as you know, those tests found only 3 cows in an entire herd, 2 domestic, 1 imported, with any evidence of BSE, and none entered the food chain. Our safeguards worked. We took all of that data along with a statistical analysis. We ran, using the Harvard Risk Assessment Model of Risk, a BSE. And then we took that information and put it in a submission to the World Organization for Animal Health. They call themselves OIE for short. That was all submitted last fall. You see, by doing so, we put the United States in the first wave of countries to request a risk classification status relative to BSE. Next month, we will be getting a preliminary answer from OIE. We're not going to have to wait long. On what risk category have been assigned to us, and in May, OIE members will then vote on that finding. Now, I have to tell you, we expect we will be at the low end of the risk range for BSE, I guess for obvious reasons. Whatever the designation, there will be an accompanying set of guidelines and safeguards that will allow us to safely export beef to any country that is willing to play by science-based rules. We are prepared to live by international guidelines, but we demand that other countries, our trading partners, do the same. You know, as I was growing up, my father John used to say to his sons, you know, your actions speak louder than your words. And he's right. And you know what? That's pretty true in international trade. Our leadership in this area, our actions speak louder than words. The new minimum risk rule we proposed last month, for instance, will expand the range of cattle that we'll accept from Canada. I appreciate there's a big debate about that. Certainly there should be. At this point, the comment period is open and we invite your comment. But I will tell you, we submitted that rule in this vein, in the vein that it's grounded on science, it's well supported by documentation. And as I said, we're anxious to hear from you. Now, if I might just focus in on one piece here. The situation in Korea has been frustrating. I can't tell you personally how disappointing it was to stand there and hear the announcement that the market was open. Got a lot of phone calls that day giving me a pat on the back. Can't tell you how frustrating it has been for me to have to come back and say, you know what, the market isn't really open. It is crystal clear to me that their announcement about accepting U.S. beef really was about words, and it wasn't about action. Their actions have signaled just the opposite, a very closed market. But I also want you to know, I'm not giving up. Our beef is safe, and it should be in Korea. Ladies and gentlemen, I will tell you what you know already, and that is that American beef is the safest in the world. And we have in place the right measures that's going to keep it that way. American consumers know that. After December of 2003, they didn't miss a beat. They understood it. And now it's time for our customers around the world to step up to science-based decisions, not the politics of the day in their part of the world. I assure you I will continue to press this issue through all channels that I have available and at my disposal. Now, looking to the future and returning to this Farm Bill proposal, we are also addressing some reoccurring trade issues that you and exporting producers have to deal with. Our aim is to replace unscientific sanitary and phytosanitary standards that unfairly impede trade and replace them with objective science-based standards in every case. To do that, we will increase the mandatory funding for market access by $250 million over 10 years. And we will fund a new $20 million grant program that focuses on sanitary and phytosanitary issues that affect agriculture. These are some of the things that we can do in Washington. But there is something that I need to ask you to do as well, to contribute to the marketability of U.S. beef at home and abroad. More importantly, it is a step that will help you to protect the health of your herd in the event of a disease outbreak. Now, I couldn't get off this stage without mentioning at least a few words about the animal identification system. I know that Bruce Knight, my Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, has already discussed this with you. I want you to know something about Bruce. You're going to like working with him. Fairly new to the job, real straight shooter, and a good guy. It's worth my time to briefly touch on this issue with you. First, I do want to thank the cattlemen for the leadership you have shown. By working with us through some really challenging times, and by pulling together in support of a voluntary approach to animal ID, what we have been able to do is literally register 25% of the premises by the end of January, which was our goal. I am encouraged by the progress that we are making, but determined to press forward with a renewed commitment to the system's success. So I urge you to continue to work with us to make the voluntary identification system a reality, a meaningful reality. I will tell you that, heaven forbid, in the event that there was ever an infectious disease outbreak in the United States, what if we were to announce that some cattle that came through some sale barn somewhere had a problem? Do you know what the first thing would be that would happen? You would be calling your state vet, or you would be calling me and saying, you know, I just bought cattle through that sale barn. Do I have a problem? And today it would be very hard for us to answer that question definitively. This is very, very important for you. I hope you will look at this issue again so this voluntary approach is successful. I firmly believe that the right approach is to let you decide. I firmly believe that the wrong approach is what too often happens, which is to say to you, it's the Washington way or it's the highway. Let's work together to get this done on a voluntary basis. Let me just wrap up with a thought or two here. I want you to know how thrilled I am to be your Secretary of Agriculture. What an honor it is for me. And it's an exciting time in the history of American agriculture. We have the potential, ladies and gentlemen, I believe, for literally a rural renaissance. Compliments of a lot of things. Your industry, your hard work, the professional way that you do your business. Certainly, we put into that renewable energy and rural development and all of the great things that are happening across this country. We have the opportunity to ensure an unprecedented disease response capability under that ID system. And we have a new farm bill on the horizon that will make America's farm policy more equitable, more market-oriented. A farm policy that is fiscally responsible and reform-oriented. I'm eager to engage in all fronts. I'm eager to stand up for American agriculture. Some of you I know are wondering how the new Congress and the new political lineup in Washington will affect the changes of getting a farm bill from here to the finish line. We are very fortunate in agriculture. We are very rarely divided along partisan lines. More often, differences of opinion arise or sprout up because of regional differences or commodity differences, something like that. I am very pleased to report to you that I've now had an opportunity on a number of occasions to sit down at length with Senator Harkin, who is the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee, and Congressman Peterson, who is the chairman on the House side. They're good men. I'm confident we can work together. The president, in his State of the Union address, reached across the aisle and made it clear that he's willing to work together. Because you know what we're working for? We're working for the good of this country. He has set that example, and he's called upon his cabinet to do the same. And, of course, I'm pleased to do so. But realizing our vision of a farm bill that is more competitive, more market-oriented, and better able to withstand challenge will require the support of our producers. I urge you to carefully consider what you believe the best future course for American agriculture is, and then, most importantly, make your voices heard. I want to wrap up and just express to you my sincere gratitude to all of you for what you do to feed our great nation and our world. I also want to say thank you for attending one of our Farm Bill forums, if that fit into your schedule, or submitting to us a comment in writing. It was your thoughts that became the basis of our proposal, America's Farm Bill. It was a pleasure delivering those recommendations this week on your behalf, knowing that they were based upon your thoughts and your ideas, knowing that they were based upon the ideas of the people that we serve, our board of directors, you. To all of you, thank you again. May God bless you and be with you and your families. Thank you.